Chapter 4. Tying Up the Web. Jarlaxle understood what he had done. By pulling the edges of the hole in on itself, he had created an extra-dimensional pocket, a cube of extra space untethered to the material plane of existence, untethered to anything but itself. Still, he was more than a little disoriented, for it wasn't so much that the pocket of extra space was turning, as that its center of gravity kept shifting. One instant he was standing on the floor, the next on the wall. He took solace in the belief that the dangerous man he had caged with him was likely fully off balance, at least until he heard the cut of a sword not far from his face, then caught the crack of a whip on his backside as he scrambled away in the absolute darkness. And then it was light, brilliant light by Jarlaxle's design, as he threw a ceramic pellet against the wall, or ceiling, or whatever it was, smashing it and releasing the blinding Dwyamer. He saw the Simfrey champion diving aside, rolling his Powafwi cloak up over his stung eyes. "I am not who you think I am," Jarlaxle proclaimed. "I think you are nobody," came the angry answer. "Not so," he said, just a bit hurt. He shook off his pride, though, and added, "I can help you if you let me." "Treachery," the Simfrey champion replied, and rushed ahead suddenly, sword leading, whip up high to crack at his adversary's face. Good fortune was with Jarlaxle, as was usually the case, when the gravitational orientation of the room again shifted, sending both him and his opponent flying down hard to the side. The reprieve would last only a few heartbeats, Jarlaxle knew, as the champion began his correction, such magnificent reflexes, even before he landed. "I am not Treyarch," he said. "I came for you."
"And so you shall have me," said the champion, coming forward with a thrust, slash, and cracking whip.
No novice to battle, Jarlaxle had his swords in hand to parry, block, and duck the attacks. But being a skilled warrior and fighting this brilliant swordsman were two different things, and it was taking much of his concentration to keep the swirling weapons at bay. Still, he had enough presence of mind to attempt to clarify his position. "I only want to help you." The champion came on again, but with less enthusiasm, and this time Jarlaxle easily avoided the attacks. Stepping a bit more out of reach, he said, "A noble house paid well."
"For my head?"
Jarlaxle rolled his eyes.
"Only if still connected to your body."
"Listen to me, I'm trying to help you. No one is going to kill you."
"I'm absolutely positive of that."
"Fine, bravado. Yes, you're an amazing warrior. No one is disputing that. But let me ask you something. For all your skill with your weapons, can you get us out of here?"
The champion straightened and stared at him.
"Exactly. Nobody of any station cares about House Simfrey or House Treyarch," Jarlaxle bluntly stated. "And neither will much exist after this day in any event. Idiot minor houses who can ill afford the loss of a single drow doing battle." He shook his head in disgust. "And over what? For what gain? Does Matron House Treyarch think she will one day sit upon the ruling council? It is preposterous and you know it.
Perhaps you should have told that to her."
"And to your own matron divine?" The champion caught Jarlaxle by surprise when he spat on the floor.
"Your mother?"
Jarlaxle asked him, and the warrior laughed.
"Your lover?"
He laughed louder.
"But you are Simfrey," Jarlaxle reasoned.
"Only because they gave me that name," he answered. "But then, like all of this, it hardly matters." Fortunately, Jarlaxle properly read the inflections in the man's voice, and so when the champion reached into his innate drow magic and produced a globe of absolute darkness, Jarlaxle wasn't surprised. And in that darkness, Jarlaxle rightly surmised that the fighter would no longer count upon good fortune in the shifting room, and so, like the champion, Jarlaxle called upon his own innate magical abilities and enacted another spell of levitation, floating up from the floor, which then became the wall. He met the champion in the middle of the blackened cube of nowhere space, and he matched him, thrust for thrust and slash for slash, through a sudden and violent melee. Jarlaxle couldn't believe how many cuts were coming at him in the darkness. It was as if the champion were wielding two swords and not just the one. and so he had to stay too close for the stinging whip to be effective, working his own blades in a series of crosses and sweeps to cover as many defensive angles as he could manage.
"Who are you?" the Simfrey champion demanded.
Jarlaxle almost smiled at the frustration in the warrior's voice. "A mere houseless rogue.
Trained as a noble son.
Self-taught. Liar." On came a ferocious barrage, and Jarlaxle had to spin away and throw another pellet of magical light, which he did not want to do. Such enchanted globes didn't come cheap, after all. The champion shied for just a moment.
"Why do you persist?" Jarlaxle asked.
"You attacked House Simfrey."
"There is no House Simfrey, fool. The Trayrock priestesses lie dead."
"Yes, I know," Jarlaxle interrupted.
"I watched you kill them.
I have to say, you seem to take a great deal of pleasure in the deed."
"Because they deserved it," said the champion.
"But the Trayrock males did not?"
That caught the champion off his guard just as he floated against the far wall and seemed prepared to shove off it to renew the melee. But he didn't, not immediately. So Jarlaxle took advantage of this momentary respite and pressed further.
"You could have killed a dozen, including the noble son of Matron Howes himself, but you did not," he said.
"Because they did not choose the fight, correct?"
The champion just stared at him.
"House Simfrey is dead," Jarlaxle reiterated.
"You cannot know this."
"I make it my duty to know such things. But if that doesn't convince you, know that the wizards who came against you were Zor-Lorans.
So yes, friend, I can know it.
Unless you believe that divine Simfrey could withstand the power of House Zor-Lorin."
There was a brief pause. Finally,
"Who sent you here?"
"Zor-Lorans," the champion growled. "Not to fight," Jarlaxle explained quickly, "simply to make sure that you were not killed."
"A prisoner, then?"
"No," Jarlaxle cried immediately, expecting the champion to fly out at him.
"There is an opportunity open to you, a great one. One that will afford you comfort and status, coin and enchanted gear beyond anything you now carry. Powerful matrons greatly desire the services of Zacnaphane Simfrey."
Jarlaxle paused, and before the champion could respond, added, "Who desires only to kill them, I am sure." That gave the man pause once more.
"Trust me, my friend, I am not your friend.
But you should be, to both our gain.
Trust me anyway, though, if for no better reason than that you have no other options.
When I say that I, above most, understand, you should believe me. I am not a houseless rogue by choice or because of a drow war."
"And how?"
"It's too long a story for us here, though one that I hope I can share with you over some lovely fey wine one day soon."
"So, now what would we do?"
"Leave," Jarlaxle answered. "The air in this place won't last forever, and I've little desire to see which of us falls first."
"And when we leave, what does that even mean? Where will we appear?"
"Right back where we entered, I hope. The longer we wait, the less the chance of that."
"Right back into the fight," Zacnaphane said. "The fight is over. I expect that by now Matron Divine is dead and House Trayrock has fled."
Zacnaphane stared at him hard, seeming none too pleased. "Your house is gone, and that is a good thing," Jarlaxle said. "For you, at least. Maybe not so much for Matron Divine and her priestesses. And it will be good for many of your associates and for many males of House Trayrock as well."
Jarlaxle saw the flash of intrigue on the weapon master's face and knew that his instincts had led him well.
This one hated the Lothian priestesses, hated the whole matriarchy of Menzo Berenzon, and the wicked demon queen who granted to her worshippers the power to enforce it.
"I have agents set all about House Simfrey, beyond the perimeter of the battle, to collect surviving men from both sides to join my band if they desire," Jarlaxle allowed.
"And who are you?"
"I am Jarlaxle, who leads Bregan de Earth."
The champion put on a curious expression.
"Assassins for hire?"
he asked, using one of the possible translations of the drow name. Much more than that. Information for payment, mostly. And a band of collectors useful for procuring valuable goods. Why, like you.
Never heard of you or your troop.
Well, now you've heard of both,
and remain unimpressed,
he said, standing against the wall of a prison from which he cannot possibly escape.
He said, wondering whether or not to kill the pretentious fool standing before him,
the pretentious fool who can leave.
Jarlaxle corrected, and he pulled out a wand and pointed it at himself. But Zacnaphane's whip took it from him, an expert snap that sent the wand flying across the room to the waiting hand of Zacnaphane, who caught it, turned it upon himself, and let the command word come to his thoughts.
You really should not, Jarlaxle started to say.
I will tell them of your unfortunate fate, Zacnaphane answered, and he spoke the command word, expecting to be teleported far from that extra-dimensional prison.
Instead, he caught a glob of viscid goo in the face, the force of it sending him spinning into the wall, or floor, or ceiling, or whatever it was, right behind him, and was there stuck fast.
I tried to warn you, was all the apology Jarlaxle would offer.
He shook his head, ran his hand through his styled shock of white hair, and got his bearings, then stepped over and took the wand from the hand of the flailing captive.
We will speak again very soon, Jarlaxle said, helping the poor Zacnaphane get the glob away from his mouth enough that he could breathe. The magical goo wouldn't last forever, but more than long enough to suffocate a victim if left to its own devices. With that done, Jarlaxle located the seam in his portable hole and opened it wide enough to crawl back out onto the now quiet battlefield. And he was relieved indeed to see that his extra-dimensional space remained there. Portable holes were useful items indeed, but they were tricky and often unpredictable. Closing one fully while inside, as Jarlaxle had done, could lead to catastrophe. Back outside, the risk was gone, so Jarlaxle closed his toy once more, then picked it up, no more than an unremarkable piece of black cloth, and tucked it and its contents into his pocket. The bridge above him, the field around him, and the tower behind him were thick with the dead, male and female, Trayrock and Simfrey. But many were gone, including Devon Trayrock, he noted, and so he was confident that Arathisune had completed his task, and that his other minions had efficiently begun the extraction of potential recruits. His confidence became surety when he went to the spot where he had entangled and then entombed the two Trayrock soldiers with his wand, to find his belt set upon the ground in the shape of a letter J alongside his fallen pouches, and one in particular, which would have seemed, along with its contents, unremarkable to any who did not know the command words to open its deeper, extra-dimensional pockets. Jarlaxle sighed in relief when he picked that up, considering that he had incidentally dropped it in the fight when he had pulled off his living rope belt. It dawned on him that if he had taken that pouch into the extra-dimensional hole, the conflicting magic would have torn rifts in the barriers between the planes. Even Jarlaxle, who lived for adventure, didn't think that would be a very good thing.
Jarlaxle has him, Arathisune reported to Matron Xerath Sor-Lauren. She seemed surprised, the assassin noted, though not as much so as her house wizard, Horu Dissamoth, standing beside her.
And where is Jarlaxle? Matron Xerath asked.
Secure and awaiting your instructions.
In the claw rift, she asked, referring to the great and deep chasm that ran through the huge underdark cavern housing the city of Menzo Berenzon. The claw rift, endlessly deep, crawled with kobold slaves, but was also rumored to be the base for Jarlaxle's secretive Brigandy Earth Band. By those who had even noticed the mercenary group thus far.
He is secure.
Is he even on the material plane?
Horu Dissamoth interjected, drawing a scowl from Matron Xerath. Arathisune arched a white eyebrow at the wizard.
Or else would he be?
Does one ever know with Jarlaxle? Matron Xerath answered.
Arathisune conceded that with a shrug.
My wizard here was convinced that Jarlaxle had fatally erred, taking an extra-dimensional bag into an extra-dimensional hole. The assassin laughed aloud.
Jarlaxle would never be that careless.
I watched it, Horu Dissamoth insisted. Again the assassin shrugged.
I know nothing of that. I know that I just left Jarlaxle, who has the Simfrey champion at his side. In a way.
Now it was Matron Zerith's turn to arch her eyebrow.
We have him, and he is unharmed, Aerith Issyun assured her. And his loyalty to House Simfrey?
There is no House Simfrey, the assassin asserted.
Zerith again seemed a bit confused.
The Treyarch attackers were driven from the field with nobles killed.
Through no small effort of Zacnaphane, yes, the assassin answered. But Matron Divine is dead, as are all of her children and relatives. There is no House Simfrey.
Then House Treyarch won?
Aerith Issyun shrugged and laughed this time.
Few of their force returned to the house. Many, including all of the priestesses who went to House Simfrey, were killed. Others have turned to a different path.
A different... Matron Zerith paused. Jarlaxle took them.
Or rather, you took them for your little band of troublemakers.
I cannot speak to that. You just did.
She knew, of course. Aerith Issyun understood. And she knew, too, that he had wanted her to know. He hadn't agreed with Jarlaxle's decision to use this moment to raise the visibility of Bregan de Aerith. They had absorbed nearly 20 warriors, a pair of wizards, and a priestess from the fallout of the Treyarch-Simfrey War, an amazing haul, depending on how many survived their wounds, but still remained a fledgling band, and obviously couldn't even be certain of the loyalties of the newcomers. Of course, Aerith Issyun knew that he didn't know what Jarlaxle knew. There were other influences behind the scenes, most likely with First House Bayenry, guiding Jarlaxle's choices here, and Aerith Issyun had been beside Jarlaxle long enough to trust the strange fellow's judgment.
"Would you have us deliver the prize to you, or to Matron Malice Doerden?" the assassin asked, changing the subject.
"Our part in this is never to be mentioned. Take him to Matron Malice."
Aerith Issyun bowed and turned to go, but paused to ask one more question.
"Does House O'Lauren hold any bond with House Treyarch beyond the hiring of your wizards to open the way to House Simfrey?"
"What do you imply?"
Horu Dissamoth demanded.
"He wants to know if we care whether or not Matron House falls," Matron Zerith answered the wizard, and her tone told Aerith Issyun that they did not. He smiled and turned again to leave.
"Tell Jarlaxle that I wish to speak with him when he disposes of his current affairs," Matron Zerith ordered him as he went, and he smiled at her appropriate choice of verb.
Horu Dissamoth snorted derisively when the assassin was gone.
"Let go of your anger," Matron Zerith told him.
"They are houseless upstarts," the wizard argued. "That is a dangerous combination, and one that should not be tolerated in the Order of Menzo Berenzon."
"Order?" Zerith echoed. "Have you ever met a handmaiden of Loth?"
"There is necessary order within the chaos," the wizard replied stubbornly.
"And Jarlaxle's fledgling band is now part of that order."
Horu Dissamoth snorted again.
"Do you think they exist without the blessing of Matron Mother Bayenry?" Matron Zerith said, chuckling at him.
Horu Dissamoth seemed as if he was about to respond, but rocked back on his heels instead.
"You are putting far too much thought into all of this," Matron Zerith scolded him. "It was a minor transaction made for our gain. We learned an important secret about the potential relationship between Utha Gentil Armgo and Matron Malice. Matron Mother Bayenry has asked of her allies that they keep a close watch on Matron Sulez Armgo and her family. She will reward me for this information, and this day we have begun a relationship with a band of mercenaries who may prove valuable to us. Finally, we now have good standing with House Doerden."
"Why would we care for House Doerden?"
because I do not underestimate them, particularly now that they will claim Zacnaphane Simfrey in their ranks, and you would be wise not to either. Matron Malice is cunning, loyal enough and wise enough to allow her house to be easily manipulated by her betters. She may one day sit on the ruling council, but even if not, it is quite possible that some day in the future she will prove a useful ally for House Zor-Lauren, or foil, which is not always a bad thing. At the very least, we have leveled the loyalty of Malice between us and the Ascendant House Barrison del Armgo. Regardless, it is done and requires no more thought and effort, she told her wizard. Now it is time for us to consider our other duties. We will watch from afar as the play continues. Horu Dissamoth bowed in acceptance, and that was the last time anyone of note in House Zor-Lauren paid any heed at all to the goings-on of the minor house called Do-Urden for decades to come. Hindsight would prove this unwise.